Hey there, my name is Elzy, the mayor of Podcast Town. Are you wanting to launch your own podcast show just like the one you're listening to right now? Our team helps launch, manage, and grow podcast shows for B2B brands just like yours. If you want to show up, hit record, and have a team that does the rest for you, head over to podcasttown.net or you can send us a text 262-278-0535. Just make sure you mention you're a friend of Josh's. And we'll get your free strategy call. Once again, that's podcasttown.net, or you can text us at 262-278-0535. Have an amazing day and enjoy this episode.
Hey, good day, fellow dealmakers. Welcome to the Deal Scout. This show is all about deals, and we talk with dealmakers at different stages of deals and different investment types. And the whole mission and purpose of the show is to educate the community about different types of deals, but for you, the listener, to reach out to our guests and say, hey, I like what you're doing. I want to figure out how to get involved in the deal. That's the mission and purpose of this. So as always, if you want to talk about a deal, have a deal, or want to connect with a guest, head over to thedealscout.com and you'll be able to find all of the guest contact information. So you'll be able to connect with them directly or connect with me and maybe get you on the show next. So today, let's just dive into a conversation with a guy who's in the middle of, he calls it in the middle of heartburn and glory, different fundraising rounds, and who's going to share his story and also some tips and advice for you founders who are raising capital. Fred, welcome to the show.
Hey, Josh. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So, Fred, let's start with this. Who are you?
So, to my kids, I'm a great dad, which is the most important thing. I raised them both by myself while starting 10 different companies. So my asterisk to raising my two kids is starting 10 companies from the ground up, but taking two public, having two others acquired by public companies. And I have a couple of private ones now, including Idea Pros, that is the company that we're going to be out doing fundraising for.
Yeah. Holy moly. Raising kids is a job in itself. And you did that kind of on your own while building 10 companies, taking two companies public, two being acquired by publicly traded companies. And now you're on to the next. Before we get into all the business stuff, there's a lot of people out there who are raised, you know, being a parent and trying to build businesses on their own. Let's talk to them first. Those deal makers out there who have the amazing job of being a parent, but also have this calling or this purpose to build a business. Let's start with this. Like, how did you do it? And what are some of the pulls that you had from both sides of that coin? And what did you have to overcome in that process?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I had to overcome is sexism, because I was the kindergarten room mom. They didn't have a room dad designation. So yeah, that was the big thing. But the reality is there's 24 hours in every day. And if you want to get things done, you can. Your kids are going off to school. You have all day long to work on whatever it is you want to work. They go to bed early. You know, you don't have to go to sleep that long. I last 3 days in a row, in fact, I went to bed around 11:30, 12 o'clock and got up at 3:30. I don't recommend that for the light-hearted and weak folks, but you know, you do what you have to do. If you have a passion, if you have a purpose, none of that replaces raising your kids, but you can do both alongside each other, and your kids are going to get valuable lessons from you to show them you can do the impossible every single day.
Yeah, you can do the impossible. It is tough. And a lot of the sacrifice that I've experienced for myself while building companies and raising kids is sleep, right? Sleep and comfort are the things that kind of take a backseat to mission and purpose.
Yeah.
You mentioned 3:30 a.m. That's my time. Like, if I'm having a weird day where I wake up super early, I look at my clock, I go, I bet it's 3:30. It's 3:30 or pretty damn close to it. It's weird.
Always for me. I don't know, but it sucks because it's not early enough to go back to sleep, and yep, it's too early to be up, you know? And so, but that's the same thing for me. I look at it and I'm like, fuck, 3:30.
It's crazy. And I've talked to Navy. Yeah. I've interviewed Navy SEALs, business leaders, politicians. They all have their time. Mine is 3:30. So we share that. Even though you're West Coast and I'm East Coast, we share 3:30 together. Fred, I'm glad we could be 3:30 buddies. Because at that time, if you do go back to sleep, it's going to screw up the whole day because you're going to wake up groggy. if you try to stay up, you're going to be tired at, 7 o'clock at night. It's a weird time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So lots of coffee, lots of caffeine and self-care, right? So self-care of like your diet, your exercise and such like that. Like how do you balance that? Because, being a dad, being a kindergarten mom and raising kids and raising these businesses, like how do you manage your own self-care?
Well, I have two main jobs, and my primary job, because the kids are grown now, primary job is Idea Pros. My secondary job, which in a sense is really my primary job, is I devote at least 2 hours a day, the beginning of the day, to work on me. And no matter when you get up, if you can do that, I'm an old dude. But I get up and I work out with a trainer 5 days a week, 90 minutes a day. I've had 5 of my 20-something-year-old employees come try to work out with me. 4 of them threw up halfway through the workout, and 1 of them quit halfway through the workout. So it's not easy stuff that I'm doing. And I do that. Then I do positive affirmations. I talk about what I'm grateful for. I pick something different every single day. It could be breathing. It doesn't have to be anything exceptional, because breathing is exceptional. And then I'll meditate if it's 5 minutes, 15 minutes, and then I'll read, whether it's a paragraph, a page, a chapter, or half a book. I do that every single morning, no matter what. So when I'm done with all those things, I'm geared up, I can focus on the day, and I crank through that day with not one little white spot in my calendar.
No white spots in the calendar. Let's come back to that. I got to write that down. Mm-hmm. No white spots in calendar. This thing about great, I know we're going to talk about deals. I swear it. But these kind of things are when people reach out and they go, "Hey, I listened to this episode." Nobody reach out and they go, "That was the number one business tip." They go, "Wow, that guy lost $50 million and he rebuilt it, or he did this and that, or they overcame adversity, or how they." That's the feedback that I get. So the deal itself, sometimes deals can be just very plain, step 1 through 3 or whatever. But yeah. I got to get on this idea of like behind the deal maker of what built the deal maker, right? And how do they organize their day, and how do they accomplish things, and how do they overcome adversity? This idea of gratefulness hit me hard this morning. And like, I woke up and my kids were ungrateful. I went and got them breakfast. I did all this stuff before I even took care of me, and it was getting me in a bind. But then I went through the gas station line, I bought some coffee, and the lady, the cashier, said, "Coffee's on me today."
Wow.
And I was, here I am bitching about stuff and like life and universe and God, and this cashier just gave me something. And I was just like, "Oh man, I need to change my gratitude to intake." So give me some advice on this gratefulness thing, and why is it important?
Well, look, especially if you're an entrepreneur or if you're an investor, there's stress every single day. There are impossible things that you're trying to accomplish, right? You can't be extraordinary. People want extraordinary lives, but they're afraid to do extraordinary things to get there. And you have to. So if you're doing extraordinary things, translate extraordinary to fucking hard. Hard. They're really hard things that you have to do every day. So you're going to have all this stress built into your day. Why not start it remembering something, anything that you're happy about? For you, it could be that, wow, I get to walk my kids to school. For the woman behind the counter at the coffee shop, it could be that, I put a smile on somebody's face today. It doesn't have to be anything major. You don't have to invent anything. You don't have to close your funding round. Wake up and find something to be positive about, because then that positive attitude will permeate throughout the rest of your day.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, is positivity attracts momentum, I think, right? I used to think this was woo-woo stuff. I really did, about like frequencies and energy and positivity. But I've been in fundraising, and if you have a bad day, you're not going to get a dollar. Just to be very clear, like if you're not up there to cast and vision and being excited about that, the investors are going to shoot you down. So yeah. It is so important to have a positive, optimistic outlook, because you're asking the investors to be optimistic with you, right?
Right, right,
now
right.
You talk a lot about this. So we were in the green room, we were talking about what do the investors want. Let's dive in there. Yeah. What do investors want?
Yeah. And by the way, two things to your point, and then I'll talk to you about what they really want. The first thing is, they're going to invest in your product, your company, but they're investing primarily in you. And if you don't pull it off, being that person that they can believe in, that they can trust, that they feel, wow, this guy inspires me. I don't give a shit what he's going to build. I want to be part of it. If you can't pull that off, you're not going to get any money, or you're going to get a little bit of money at a very, very low valuation. So first thing is you. That's why it's so important to take care of you physically, emotionally, you know, all those things right at the beginning of every day. That's what's really important. Now, if you go and you pull down a Y Combinator pitch deck or any one of those things, it really lays out that all the things that the investor wants to know about, except really the one thing that's on their mind when they said yes, they would take your call. What's in it for me? What's in it for me never gets laid out front and center. And if you want to get the attention and you want to not have people glaze their eyes over by slide number three, you can start by right in the very beginning. Hey, Joe, this is Fred. I got this great deal happening. I feel there's a huge problem. We got a great solution to it. And if I can get you to cooperate with me and to invest with me, I know I can get you at least 10 times on your money. Stay tuned. Right. So now all I'm thinking about,
attention.
Exactly. I don't even care what's coming next. I got 10 times. And then you're going to dig into it near the end of your 10 slide presentation. But you want to get their attention right up front. What's in it for me? I'm going to 10 times, 20 times your money. And I'm going to show you how later on in one of the slides. Now they're paying a lot more attention to what you're saying. And you're not going to find that in any pitch decks out there. At least I haven't. But good tip for all you entrepreneurs.
Yeah. We forget, right? Like, who do you serve, right? As a business leader, I'm like, okay, here are my clients. I got my ideal avatar for my client, and here's how I grow and all this stuff. As founders, I found myself guilty of this. We do very little work in what is our ideal investor? What does a partnership look like for them? What's in it for them? Because we're like, just give me your money and go the hell away so I could go build this stuff and serve my people, right? Yeah. And we miss that. And I'm guilty of it so many times. So while going through that, how do we as founders, because you've done it a lot, you've worked with thousands of entrepreneurs. Let's do this. You've got some major creds. I'm looking up on your website. You guys have done some amazing stuff and you're on an amazing mission to help lots of entrepreneurs. But a lot of times we don't look at the investors as partners. So like, give us some things to change your paradigm of thinking when working with investors.
Everybody's your partner. Everybody that you interact with, whether it's your employees, whether it's your customers, your suppliers, certainly your investors, and if you're public, obviously all your shareholders are around the world. So you have to treat them all on a one-to-one basis. For example, if you're working with a supplier and it's a multinational corporation with thousands and thousands of employees, what's going to happen is going to depend on your relationship with that one person that you're talking to. It's all about interpersonal relationships, and you have to connect. And when you're presenting to, let's say you're presenting to five investors, you better look at their faces. You better look at their eyes. You better look at what's going on. We sit there and we practice our monologue for a month. Don't go in there with a monologue. Go and look and see that Joe is looking away when you're talking about certain parts of what you're doing. Stop what you're doing. Fuck the presentation. Talk to Joe. Joe, you know, I saw you don't look like you're that interested. I'm not explaining myself well enough. What are your concerns? And let's address them right now. When you do that, you can be human when you do that. And that's what people want to see. It's humanity. It's one-on-one. It's relationships. It's not the check and the contract. It's about a lot more than that.
Yeah. Joe, you said fuck a lot, which I like that word. It's fornication under consent of the king, right? There's actually a license for it, but it has such powerful meaning, and you're very intentional about your language. I see it even here on your website. Fuck average, be legendary. Right. And that's so important to you. Why is that? Why do you intentionally do that? Because some people might be offended by that. But it seems like you're intentional about it.
Yeah, I probably should have asked you first.
I don't mind.
But, okay, but actually, I have a trademark on Fuck Average Be Legendary. Shockingly, they gave me one. Look at all the people that are really out there making it. Is any of them normal? Can you point to one middle of the road person out there that is slaying dragons and just went down the corporate aisle doing everything that big business wants you to do? In order to have a chance of making it, to get ahead in the world, if you're doing it as a gunslinger, the individual entrepreneur, you need to go out and fire some weapons. You know, you're not going to be able to do that by working 9 to 5. You're not going to be able to do that by just having the regular dialogue conversation. If you're going to start a business, you need to find out how you're going to kill all the other people. You can't just go in there and want to be, by the way, here's another thing investors hate.
Yeah.
It's $100 billion industry. And if I can get 1%, I'm going to be $1 billion company. No, you're not. Nobody gets 1%. You get killed. So it's $100 billion industry, and I'm going to show you how I'm going to take all of it. That's what they want to hear. And so you got to think that way. You got to go outside the bounds. You know, you got to get outside your comfort zone, which I really call your quicksand zone. You got to get out of there. Nothing happens there. You can wake up in the morning and still get your paycheck once a week, but nothing's happening in the comfort zone that's going to change your life for the better.
I love you, man. This is so exciting because it's challenging, right? Like, cause you're saying like, no, you're going out there to destroy other businesses and to gobble up market share. And I like this. I've heard this so many times. Yeah. There's 7 billion people on the earth approaching 8, whatever the case may be. And they all drink water. So if we could get just 1% of the market share, right. And you're like, no, that's not how it works. Cause
right.
You know, but the idea of, hey, these are the groups of people that, you know, that we're serving. These are our competition, and this is how we're going to go steal their business, right? Like, that's got people's attention.
Exactly.
What I like about what you're doing too is you're very intentional about going, you know, I don't care if I piss people off. I'm going to attract the kind of people that I want to work with, right? It's polarizing. I'm going to get these people out of my way, and then these people are going to like the way I do that, but that's by you being authentic. When has that served you well, and when has that hurt you?
I think being authentic always serves you well, no matter what the result is, right? Because you're going to get what you need, and you're going to avoid the things that are going to give you pain later. So I'll give you one example of when being authentic served me really well. I had a company, and that company was called Boxlot, and we were building these technologies, and we were supposed to be done with this revolutionary technology in the next week. And my head of engineering came up to me and told me a week before, we're screwed. It's going to be 6 months, 9 months, maybe even a year. There's this big issue we found. We got to undo a lot of the things we did. And I sat around for half the day thinking about what to say to my investors, because I had about $8 million worth of investment at that point. We're still a private company. And at the end, I decided I'm just going to go tell them the truth. And I wrote an email basically saying, hey, this is what I promised you. This is why it's not happening. This is what I'm going to do about it. And please forgive me. And I sent it. And I knew I was going to get bitched at. And sure enough, 2-3 minutes later, the phone started ringing. But it was all these investors saying, what can I do? Do you need more money? How can I help? It was all like really positive reactions because you were honest with them. You were authentic with what happened and what you need to do. And by the way, they sent me more money and I didn't even ask for it. And so it always serves you well. There's other cases where you're trying to deal with somebody. Like, for example, we have 400 companies under us that with Idea Pros, we partner up with entrepreneurs that want to start a business. We have 400 active companies underneath us now. My life is hell. And there are partners that are a pain in the ass. Not very many of them, but there's some that really have very unreasonable expectations and think that just partnering with me is going to make them successful, and they're not willing to do the hard work. I had this guy, Robert Richmond. You should look him up, anybody listening. robertrichmond.com. He was one of the founders over at Zappos, and now he teaches corporate culture to all the biggest organizations, Google, all of them. Name one, General Electric, name one. He teaches, and he lives down the street. He's going to be on my board. He was here talking to me the other day, and he said that the corporate culture, what you want as a company, needs to extend out beyond the four walls of your business. So if you're dealing with somebody that wants to be a partner and they don't feel like you, they don't act like you, you're going to have problems with them because they're going to start destroying your culture. And the same thing with employees, you need to look at the people around you that you're going to work with. So authenticity and only taking people that are going to work well with you is really only going to help you in the long run.
Oh man, we've seen that so many times. So culture, in terms of culture, there has to be an authentic, you set the stage as the leader on what is culture going to be. And if you are off the bat not being authentic or whatever, then the culture will develop itself.
Yeah,
and then you might
find the one you want.
It might not be, you might be building something amazing, but it's not the one you want because as a leader, you didn't set the stage.
Yeah.
Holy moly, slaying dragons, quicksand zone, this, the spot of uncomfortability. But I promised we would talk about the no white spots in the calendar. What, I mean, obviously like leave nothing undedicated to a specific mission, but how did you, where could that get you into trouble?
If you're not feeling good a certain day, but yeah. I had managed to work my way through them as well. When I say no white spots, I try to do a couple of things. Number one, I try to limit a normal meeting to 15 minutes. If you can't figure your shit out in 15 minutes, you're really going to have some problems, right? Yeah. Everybody wants an hour meeting, and they're a waste of time for the most part, unless you're digging with a team, getting ready to launch something, many moving parts you have to address. Like your regular meetings, 15 minutes, and then leave 5 minutes between those meetings. That's another way to really manage your calendar. So there are white spots, but they're tiny little slivers. Yeah. You leave 5 minutes in there so you can address any emergencies during the day or check your emails in between and show up on time. So when I have a meeting, let's suppose, well, I did. I had a meeting right before this. And when I had the meeting, I said right in the very beginning, hey, I have a hard stop at X time. And You see me 1 second after that, the screen's going to be blank because I got to go. So I'm telling you right away. And then I'll give them like a 2 minute warning that, hey guys, I got 2 minutes left. Let's get this done. You can manage not only your calendar, but manage how you interact with people and keep those things compartmentalized. You can get a hell of a lot done every single day.
Yeah. Fred, I got to ask your advice on this. I am getting constantly pulled. When you start, you have a number one show, you've been, you're top of your game, and you've had to learn how to do this, I'm sure. Cause I'm on a mission to help people, man. I love helping people and I want to do this, but I've got to keep my own lights on. I've got to keep my own investors and my own portfolio companies happy and all this crap that I'm trying to figure out as a leader, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone wants time. It's the most precious asset. That's the only thing that I have that's the most valuable thing, right? And everybody wants it. And they all want it. I've got 4 text messages right now going, hey, we want to meet with you and have lunch. We want to talk with you about this. We want to learn more about this. How do you manage that when... How do you manage? How do you manage that?
First of all, you have to learn to say no. Look at the meetings that you're going to have. If there's no great value to you, you have to learn how to say no. That's the one thing. And you'll see a lot of the times that when people want meetings, they don't really need a meeting. So you can say no in a different way. You can say no when the guys that want to have lunch with you, hey, I really want to talk to you. I'm just not going to have time. This week is really swamped. Can you just send me an email? Tell me everything you want to talk about. I'll promise you I'll get to it tonight after I'm done with my schedule and we'll get it worked out. So there's a lot of times you don't need to take the meeting. And the other thing I do is I have a great executive assistant. And I release my calendar and I release my email and she pours through all of it. She schedules things brilliantly. If I have to move something, she takes care of it. And when that same person asks for lunch, I would then say, that's an awesome idea. I'd love to get together with you. I'm copying Lily and she's going to set up whenever. And then Lily's going to write and say, hey, sorry, we can't do lunch today. You could send Fred a sandwich if you want, but otherwise we can meet on such and such a day, or these are the top three things that he'd like to talk to you about, whatever. So,
yeah. And then you have 15 minutes. So what this forces, the 15 minutes forces the other person to do is go, okay, let's skip all the chat. Like, hey, Bob, how's the kids and how's the dog and how's that shit? And it's just like, hey, I've got 15 minutes with Fred. Like, this is the problem I have. This is what I need. Fred, what do you think? Right. It makes them clarify what they want and need, because they only get 15 minutes.
Absolutely. And by the way, that's plenty of time. If you can't figure your shit out in 15 minutes, you're screwed.
You're screwed. Mm-hmm. Oh, Fred, you're awesome, man. We didn't even talk about Idea Pros. I know you have 400 portfolio companies and such. So what is Idea Pros and how'd you start it?
Yeah, I started Idea Pros about 4.5 years ago. I was going to either stop working or, unbeknownst to me at the time, work harder than I ever have in my life. And I chose the latter. One of many stupid decisions I've made over time, but it's also very, very rewarding, very gratifying. 550,000. That's how many new entrepreneurs are born every single month in the United States. 550,000 new businesses launching with new entrepreneurs every month. Our birth rate is 300,000. So almost double the amount of entrepreneurs being born every month than babies. It's an insane number. And the great majority of them don't really have the support system. You know, they're not rolling out of Facebook or Instagram or one of those companies and being senior executives. And now they have this portfolio of venture capital companies that they can call and get help with. They don't have teams that they're bringing along with them. The vast majority of entrepreneurs are this one person with a great idea, and they don't know what they're supposed to do. They don't know what they're not supposed to do. They don't know how to take that idea and build it into a business. And that's where Idea Pros comes in. We our flagship product, it's expensive. It costs like $100,000 to $200,000 to work with us. If you come to us with an idea, we partner with you. We're going to take 30% of whatever we build together, and we're going to do everything from the initial research all the way through to product naming, positioning, competitive analysis, customer profiling, website building, engineering, app development, go-to-market strategy, website development, and nationwide launch, and all the connections I have to give you an unfair advantage. So that's a lot of money, but it's about a quarter of what you would spend on your own, and you make a ton of big mistakes. So that's our main product. And then this summer, we just launched kind of low-hanging fruit products, because we've had 100,000 applications in the last 2.5 years and been able to help 400 people. And all those people, the other 100,000, think they're entrepreneurs and they need help. So I've created video courses on purpose-driven entrepreneurship that one of my existing partners just completed and was speaking to me last night, and he said, I should tape this. In fact, I will tape this. I'm going to go back and ask him. He said, I've literally spent $100,000 on courses. Your course is the first time I had somebody speaking to me in an authentic way, getting right down to the black and white of things, how to do things, why to do things, and how to do them really well. I learned more in this than I did with that $100,000 I wasted. And it's $200. And so we do that. We have idea validation things for around $1,000. You know, you think you have a great idea, and if you're an entrepreneur, especially first, second time entrepreneur, you're going to build what you think is great. You're going to go to your mom and she's going to tell you, that's a great idea.
Great idea, Sonny.
Great idea. You know, talk to your friends at the bar. Love it, man. You're awesome. And the last thing you should be doing is building what you think is a great idea. You need to find your audience and make sure it's something that they want. So we'll take whatever you think your idea is, we'll completely tear it apart, rip it apart, 40-page research report on it. We'll position you. We'll get you a pitch deck to go to market with and go raise money. And for $1,000, you may avoid spending $500,000 foolishly, and we'll give you the knowledge that you need to get forward. So we're doing lots of really good things for people that aren't otherwise getting help. And I'm really proud of the work we do. Also, by the way, we have free stuff, and I don't want to just ramble on, but it's a bit of a story. So ideapros.com/blog. I'm so proud of our blog on that page because it covers every single element of entrepreneurship that, that you should be concerned with. And each one of them comes with about a half hour video, all free. And then my Instagram page, I got, I don't know, around 500,000 followers on Instagram at Official Fred Carey, C-A-R-Y. And on there, I talk about entrepreneurship. I talk about personal development, positivity, doing the right thing, changing your mindset. And there's a lot of stuff for a lot of people, whether you have a dime or whether you're going to go get a second mortgage to work with me as a partner.
Yeah, I cashed all my pension to build the thing and I lost all my money there.
I've done that a million times. Yeah. I have no retirement account, zero. Yeah.
That's interesting. Let's talk about the future, right? Like as entrepreneurs, a lot of times we're like, all right, we're building this stuff and I'm investing all in my business. And people are, you know, ask me like, what's your retirement? Yeah, I've got a few investments, but like I'm all in investing in myself and these businesses. These are the only assets that I have control over. I throw money at a 401k and then a new president or a new governor or new this or new that happens and it could change everything. What are your views? Just what are your views? I won't put any limitations on it.
I highly don't recommend what you're about to hear. But for me, my retirement plan is going to involve throwing some dirt on my dead face. I'm going to work. I just recently promised my kids I'd retire by the time I hit 90. You got to keep rolling, man. If you want to live, I feel the same as I did when I was 40, and that was 32 years ago. And so I don't have any problem not saving for the future because I am building the future instead of saving for the future. You know, my company Idea Pros, we're doing three different rounds of funding, the last bit of which is going to be an IPO on NASDAQ here by the second quarter. And, you know, that's probably $250 to $500 million company then that right now I own 100% of. So my retirement plan is the things that I'm working on today. Work on cool shit. And your retirement plan is what you're presently building with your present business.
Yeah, I don't have a retirement plan because I plan on doing this work because I love doing it. And it's you mentioned purpose a lot, and we got to dig into purpose. I'm going to do this to the day I drop. And it's a job that I can, right? I grew up on a construction site swinging hammers. Can't do that your whole life. You know, I was wrestling alligators for a while. Can't do that your whole life. I fought fire. I've done a lot of crazy, crazy ass jobs because I was always working towards what I'm doing now. But what's your purpose? Why are you doing this? 72 years old, if my math is right. Like, why didn't you just throw in the towel and retire and, you know, go move to the villages and swing golf clubs your whole life versus hell yeah, I'm going all in.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I decided I'd never play a game with balls smaller than mine. So no golf for me. I'm a good bowler, good bowler. But look around you, like look at like the billionaires that you want to follow. None of them need to make any money.
Yeah.
Not one of them need to make any money. And they're out there working. They're out there. Doing their thing, creating other companies, going out into space, right? You got billionaire roulette happening right now with people going off to space. It's just in me, not to stop. This is my adrenaline. This is what feeds me. And that's why I keep going.
Super cool. How do you know you won?
How do I know I won?
Or are winning?
You don't win. It's an ongoing thing. You know, it never ends. Something that just continues on and on, and you have temporary failures, temporary victories, and you just keep marching through. There's no finish line, really. It's a lifelong work that you someday. Here's my goal.
Yeah,
I want to change the lives of 10,000 people. Something's beeping. Do you hear the beeping?
I hear that. I don't know what that is.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
Okay.
So I want to change the life of.
Is it 10, your headphones? People. Are they Bluetooth? It might be headphones. Okay.
Oh, good.
Who knows?
So I want to change the life of 10,000 people in a way that is going to be impactful enough for them to turn around and do 1/10 of what I'm doing. Change the life of 1,000 people. Right. And if they can affect those people enough to then change the life of 100 people, if you do the math again, you'll see that's 1 billion people. And so that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I do every day on my social media. That's what I do, bringing in all these entrepreneurs and trying to work with them and change their lives. And I'm well on my way to getting that done. And when I get to 10,000, maybe I'll change the rules to 100,000, because I started at 1,000 and I blew through that really fast.
Yeah, super cool. When we talk about strengths and weaknesses, right? You as Fred, 72 years old, building business, your father, you're going to build a company and take it public. You've done it, you know, and you're going to sell this and you're going to hit your goal. I just believe it. You know, I just know you're going to do it. When we talk about strengths and weaknesses as a entrepreneur at 72 years old, if you look back and you go, man, this is one of my greatest weaknesses in business. What is your quicksand? What is your weakness?
My biggest weakness is firing people, by far. I always believe in people, and I've always believed there's an opportunity to, if somebody's not performing, maybe they're in the wrong role. But again, if you're an entrepreneur and you're switching from your entrepreneur phase to your leadership phase, and by the way, you would think like, oh, he's an entrepreneur, he's a leader, or she's an entrepreneur, she's a leader. No, entrepreneurs are the worst leaders in the world because why? Because they've been doing everything themselves, right? They're traditional one-arm paper hanger. And you got to make that transfer over to a leader, release, let go, hire really competent people. And when one of those people is not performing, you need to 3 tries, sit down, talk with them, set expectations, set goals, review again in a week. Are those changes being made? If not, what else can we do? And then the third time out, when you don't do that, then the organization starts getting poisoned. Just like when you have an outside partner that's not part of your culture, right? If you have somebody in the organization, especially in a leadership position, that's not doing what they're supposed to be doing, that's passing bad blood down, it goes throughout their whole part of the organization and then spreads out into the rest of the company. It's really contagious. And I've done that a couple of times because I had people with really high pedigrees coming out of the best companies in the world. And I just gave them a break for almost a year and it really hurt. That's my big weakness.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, you're a people person. Like you care for people.
Absolutely.
Where do you think that stems from? Why?
Actually, I think it's from my mom. My mom was this incredible Italian woman. My mom and dad, by the way, polar opposites. I learned from my dad what I should not do as a parent. From my mom, I learned everything that I should do. Both really valuable lessons, you know, because I got both sides of it. But my mom, Italian. Born and raised in Italy. I was actually born in Italy myself. And there was always room for us first. You know, when we're sitting at the dinner table, when my parents were separated, if I needed more food, I needed seconds, she'd be scraping it off her plate. You know, when she had 4 boys and never worked until I hired her as my receptionist, which was a complete disaster with a heavy Italian.
Did you fire her?
No. But in this particular case, I think I did the right thing. But I learned from her to really be empathetic. And when you can not just have sympathy for somebody else or just be close to somebody else, but really get inside what they're feeling and associate with that, it helps create better relationships all along for everybody. And the more empathetic you can be, the better people you're going to have around you in your circle, and the more you're going to receive back that stuff that you were talking about that you didn't believe at first. It really is true. And it's true not because of some miracle. It's true because when you're spreading good stuff, people are going to stick around, other people that enjoy that good stuff and want to give it back.
So, yeah, man, this is super cool. As you're building this, you know, you've got 400 portfolio companies, right? You've taken an equity stake in these groups and you've helped them build some amazing stuff. Why would they partner with you guys, right? You know, they're going to pay 100, 200K. There's going to be an equity piece that they share with you guys. Like, why did they come to you and why did they say yes?
it's a nightmare out there trying to create something.
It's so hard.
You know, you don't know what you're doing for the most part. And when I'm creating that company, I'm also creating a really good entrepreneur because we train them as well. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. We literally have them be their own project manager. They have to color within the lines, but they're seeing all the pieces of what we do, why we do it. They're getting videos from me and live meetings with me to talk about this is why, you know, you don't want to go to consumers to figure out what your name should be. Do you think some little thin little guy in a black shirt sitting in front of an audience and saying, hey, I want to compete against Microsoft and IBM and Digital Equipment, and I want to call my company Apple. You think anybody in that audience would say yes? You know, so we teach them what to go to consumers for, what to avoid at all costs, and the reason behind why you want to be different than the competition, why you want to name yourself differently than the competition, you know, why you want to find their one-star reviews and make them your five-star reviews. And when you can do those things, which is really easy on the internet, when you can do those things, then you have a much better chance. You have an unfair advantage that a first-time entrepreneur is not going to have. And when folks come and talk to me, they get it. In fact, a lot of people that we end up partnering with are people that were looking to, where do I find an app development, or how do I patent my product? And I'll have an ad that says, you're fucking nuts. I'm using that word again. The last thing you want to do is build an app. An app's a road. You're building a road to nowhere. You know, you need to find out what it is you're doing, what's the valuable thing you're doing, and then who are the people that really need that thing. But then you build your app when you got that, because the app is just your vehicle to get that information to them. And so when people hear that and see that and meet with us and look at the pedigree of not just me, but the executives on the team, and understand that they're going to be partners, then it's a no-brainer, because they were about to spend $100,000, $150,000 just on an app. And they're going to get the whole thing, including an app, for the same price. So it's a no-brainer. Yeah,
it's a no-brainer. Sounds cool. Sounds super cool. And with these 400 companies, what's your role? Are you advisor? Are you board member? Like, what's your specific role?
Yeah, the whole first part of it is we're kind of like an upside down venture capital firm, right? Instead of giving money to somebody and having them burn it all, we have them make a contribution to us. And so my primary role in the very beginning is to have the infrastructure and the guidance needed to go from that idea to what that final first product of your new company is going to be. Once you launch, then my role is like a strategic advisor. I have a guy, for example, has a new energy product that's awesome. It's called Pocket Rocket, pocketrocketgo.com. Check it out. It's pure liquid caffeine. Tastes like shit. It's only 2 ounces. You take a shot of that, 30 seconds later, it's like a mini Adderall or something. No jitters, no down effect after 4 hours. Really, really good product. And we think we're going to slay 5-hour energy and similar competition. It doesn't seem to do anything for you. He was trying to get into casinos and couldn't. Called me. I have connections. We're now talking to every single casino in the state of California to start out with, you know. And so the whole connection part of it, I argue that if I gave you a blank piece of paper and saying, I'll be your connector, that should be enough to hand me that kind of money. And historically, it used to be when I worked with bigger companies.
Yeah. So why are you guys raising money? What are the needs for funds? You're getting money. You're an upside down VC group. You're getting money from the client, the partner. Why outside capital?
Because we have this plan for really huge growth very, very quickly. So, and by the way, an investment in Idea Pros is also an investment in 400 different companies, any one of which could end up being a unicorn. So it's if you're an entrepreneur and you like investing in entrepreneurial businesses, this one is just like, wow, I get to invest in 400 companies at the same time and take one bet on 401 things. So that's really interesting. But for us, again, we've had 100,000 applications, served 400 of these flagship product companies, and we can get to a whole lot more people. So we really have to ramp up our advertising. We really have to ramp up our visibility. I need to go on speaking tours, and we have 10 different products that we've laid out in all these different price points that we need to do a massive growth effort in advertising, bringing in the human resources necessary to back them up. And the other thing that's probably the biggest thing of everything we're doing is we've just built and we're testing a platform that really is Amazon for services. If you're an entrepreneur and you're starting a business and you don't know where to go, but you need help with import, export, logistics, drop shipping, HR support, funding support, accounting help, literally anything you need help with, it's all there on that platform. Even strategic consulting, you have all these different service things right there you can go to, pick what you want, pay by the month for what you need at a fraction of what it's going to cost you to build your infrastructure around you. And I think that by itself has the potential of being a $1 billion business. And that's just one component of what we're doing. So a lot of need for a lot of money. So we're doing three different things. We're doing a first round that by the time this is out, this will probably be done, just to get some fire on the whole thing. And then we're going with Start Engine. And okay, if you guys don't know Start Engine, it's equity-based crowdfunding. We're going to raise $5 million there, and because that's the maximum you can raise in the CF exception in crowdfunding. And then after that, we're going to do a NASDAQ IPO. At least that's the intention. We've signed with EF Hutton to do that. And it's probably going to be April or so, depending on market conditions. So a lot of things that we're doing very quickly. If anybody wants to talk to me about it, they can actually just even reach me directly at fred@ideapros.com.
Yeah. So I like this. So you have the availability to do crowdfunding, non-accredited investors to the community, right? For less than 100 or for $100 or more, or something, you could invest in 400 companies. You have your accredited rounds that you're going after, and then you want to go public round to take this thing public.
Yeah.
This might be for another conversation. You could always say, let's chat about this later. It's too, what effect would the IPO have on a 400 company? Maybe by the time you go public, it might be 500 companies. What kind of positive or negative effects might it have on the portfolio?
Well, when you're a public company, you have thousands of investors that have a vested interest in seeing that your performance is maximized. And they're also investors on the side of every one of those companies that launch. So you literally, let's suppose you have 100,000 investors, they all have a piece of each one of those companies. So anytime anything of relevance happens or a new company launches, I have a duty to issue a press release. Another Idea Pros company launches, I have built-in audience that's not only going to tell themselves, but all their friends about these new businesses that are coming out. So I think it will have a very dramatic positive effect on all those companies.
Interesting. So the companies coming in, the companies are not hey, I want to build a landscaping company, right? Like a lifestyle business, I want to build it and then one day hand it over to my kids or whatever. This is like companies that are looking for growth, scale, and exit, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You need an exit plan. And there are amazing landscape companies out there. I don't happen to have one. My landscaper is not that great. He was just coming in the house. but there are good ones out there, and it's a good business. And that's just not the type of thing that you're going to need me for or that I would be interested in. Not to say that there are not opportunities for those type of people to learn from what we do, because if you want to be a landscape company, well, let's stick with that example. You want to have this competitive advantage. And most people just, I'm going to start my landscape company. I'm going to get little plastic bags with rocks in it and my business card, and I'm going to throw them in the lawns of every home and get people to have my landscape service. Instead, same as you would do if you're building a multinational organization, dig in there, see the competition, see what the landscape business is all about. What is it that people get frustrated with their landscapers? Find a way to know what that is and go lead with the fact that, hey, you know, all that shit you worry about, the weeds piling up or the leaf blowers are just killing your Saturday mornings. We have a solution for that, right? Go be different, whatever it is you're going to do.
Yeah. That's interesting. I love it. Have you, would you guys ever consider like a SPAC, or what are your views on, you know, going public, those kind of routes?
Yeah, I don't think we'd need to do that. And by the way, between companies, several years ago, I spent 2 years as an investment banker and raised about $2 billion in SPACs. But they're kind of painful now, from what I've seen lately. You know, there's this option to drop out of a SPAC when the SPAC decides what their target is going to be. And you can elect to take your money out when that happens. And I've seen 90% of people taking their money out. So it's a pretty uncertain thing. And I frankly don't think that we're big enough to be a target of a SPAC. I think we're valued enough, but you know, we're probably going to be doing about $10 million in revenue this year. And for a SPAC, they need to see something that's bigger than that.
On the equity piece, where you guys come into an organization, are you guys do you guys have deals in there for, you know, like how do you guys get paid as these companies are producing? Is it, you know, on distributions, top line revenues? Like what kind of financial model do you guys have, or is it a deal by deal basis?
It's deal by deal, but I'm always looking for that exit sign. So I'm not eager to take money out of a company. I'd rather put it towards growth. And so I haven't pulled any draw on anything. I want them to continue using their capital, building their business. And then, you know, I'd like to see a check for at least several hundred thousand instead of, you know, hey, here's your check for $2,548.32
for this month. 32 cents. And you're like, someone go cash this.
Yeah.
Awesome. So as you guys are building this out, when companies go, a portfolio company goes to go public or be acquired, they're leaving your portfolio or maybe a funding round where they want to liquidate private, you know, the investors that were before them. Like, would you guys be open to those kind of things?
Yeah, I'm open. Fundamentally, it's all about having that partner, that entrepreneur succeed, and whatever I can do to not be in the way of that success, I'm going to do.
Cool. Yeah. And then what about fundraising, right? 400 of these companies, I'm sure there's a handful of them that need money and they need to go, you know, get some money, go ask, you know, friends, family, angels, venture, right? How do you guys work with them?
We're partnered with a lot of angel groups. Tech Coast Angels is one example. They're the largest angel group in the country. We're partnered with at the CEO level with Start Engine, with WeFunder on the product crowdfunding side of it. We're partnered with Indiegogo, all of the biggest firms. Plus, we have our own network of angel and investors and highly accredited investors to lead people to. And we're starting to do pitch deck competitions within the company itself, led by a couple of really high rollers that I don't deserve to be working with that think this is a lot of fun. And we're really making kick-ass pitches and really training entrepreneurs how to really present well. And so we have a lot of resources available in that arena.
So you've seen a lot and you've done a lot. And you've also seen a lot from the investor side and advisor side. On advice for entrepreneurs, right? I love to add, you know, I've been an entrepreneur for a long time and I figured 10,000 ways not to do something, right? What is the worst advice that you think entrepreneurs are hearing nowadays? And then what do you think that it should be pivoted to?
Well, I don't know that I'm qualified to say what the worst advice is, but I can tell you some of the things that you hear is things like work-life balance, you know, and screw that. You're not going to make it. You are not going to make it when you're just starting out with work-life balance. You need to find something that you're so passionate about that it becomes one thing. Your life is one beautiful painting, not here's my work, here's my life. You know, I got this hours for my family, this hours for my work. Do it all at the same time. And you don't need a work-life balance. You need to focus every bit of your attention on succeeding while really taking abundant care of your family and your loved ones and your relationships. You can do it all at the same time. That's the that's the worst thing. And so what people should be doing is what I just said, coupled with the fact that you're going to screw up, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to fall flat on your face, and smile when you do that. Because as you said, you found 10,000 ways not to do something, but then that led you to that one way of making it happen, of doing it the right way. And so if you look at failures as this temporary bump in the road to success, then you're going to embrace those failures because, fuck, I just learned something else.
Yeah. We only have a few more minutes left of the, I could spend a lot more time talking to you, and I appreciate your time. Thank you. This is gold. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
First of all, let's get some good house cleaning stuff out of the way. Where could people go to connect with you and do a deal? Cause there's going to be people go, hey, I want to invest, whether it's through the crowd or whether it's through direct. So, and then there's going to be people that go, I'd like you to take a look at my business and I'd like to apply. So what's a good place for people to connect with you and do a deal?
Yeah. If you're looking to learn more about anything that we're doing as far as fundraising or working together, just really fred@ideapros.com. I have my executive assistant, Lily, that might insist that you send us a sandwich before we take our meeting. And that's really the best way. If you're looking to learn more about Idea Pros, you're an entrepreneur, you want some of the stuff that we have available, just go to ideapros.com. There's an application form on there. There's things on there that talk about a lot of the things that we do. And then regardless of, even if you don't want anything, do me a favor and follow me on Instagram at official Fred Carey. And if you watch every day or listen every day, I think it's going to change your life, because there's only one thing you can do to change your life overnight, and that's change your mindset, right? And I can't make you an overnight millionaire. I can't make your wife love you more or your husband hate you less. I can't do any of those things overnight, but I can change the way you view all those things just by changing the way that you view yourself and your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Super awesome. If we did get a sandwich together, I come and visit you and we're hanging out, we're taking the company public, we're going to go ring the bell or whatever. And we go get a sandwich. What's your favorite kind of sandwich? You mentioned it twice on the show already. It sounds like you're hungry.
Yeah. You know, I kind of screwed myself about 5 months ago because I watched a movie on a show on Netflix called The Game Changers. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it. It's about veganism. And it's not like a squealing baby pig being dragged across a bloody floor. It's about how you individually perform a lot better. It's had all the top athletes in the world, the strongest man in the world, like Tom Brady, who's not the strongest man in the world, they're two separate people, and fastest runner in the world, longest runner in the world. All these people at the top of their game changed to a vegan diet. And so I said, screw it, I'll try it for that, because there are all sorts of ancillary benefits to it as well. And so now it's a vegetable sandwich. But 5 months and one day ago, it was bloody roast beef with lots of mayonnaise and white bread. And I'm going to get back there again, because I'm doing this for my health, not for any type of, you know, psychological reason or to save the animals or anything, just for my own personal health. So probably have an impossible burger, actually. Those things rock.
Okay, sounds good. Well, while we do that, I'll watch you eating your vegan sandwich. Make sure you don't bite your tongue, because being a vegan, you cannot eat meat, okay? And yeah, then I'll have a hamburger or something like that. But we should do that one day, get that on the book. But you can't have any bites of my burger, okay?
You can smell. No.
During this interview, man, you've been great. What questions should I have asked you, Fred, that I screwed up and did not ask you?
Wow, that's a great question.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. But see, in that question, it assumes that you would have screwed up by not asking me. So I'm very reluctant to say anything like that, because you've been awesome. So probably the only thing that you haven't asked me is where I live exactly, and why I like it, and more about me growing up in Italy. But we can do that in the next show.
Okay. Before we do that, all right. So growing up in Italy, how old were you when you came stateside?
Well, I came to the U.S. for a year and a half when I was 7, but then went back to Europe. So I came over when I was 16. And given my age, Came over with bell-bottom pants and polka dot shirts and big white collars and beetle hair. And I showed up in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, where everybody had black leather jackets and greased back hair.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to kick my ass. So yeah, that was tough.
What was your nickname when you came on over?
Asshole mostly, because I was not liked very much, but then I was the hippie. But by the end of my senior year, I became the president of the school's first dress code committee. So I went from an outsider to allowing kids to wear jeans and t-shirts.
What languages do you speak?
I speak Italian and English and French.
Okay. So in Italian, could you say something about the show? Be like, you know, for the Deal Scout or for Josh, could you give us a promotion in Italian?
Sì. Josh, questo show è incredibile, magnifico. Voi lì in Italia che parli inglese, vieni a sentire. È molto, molto buono.
I assume it was something good because I was nodding my head. You could have been like, this is the worst show I've ever been on. Do not listen to this. Unsubscribe. Unlike it. No,
I said that it's a great show. You're amazing. And if you're Italian and you speak English, come and watch it. Come and listen.
Oh, man. Amazing. Beautiful. Thank you for that. Fred, you've been an absolute star. So fellow, you know, deal makers in the audience, as always, reach out to our guests and say thank you. Let's show some gratitude to our guests. They've invested their time for you. And they get benefits too, but like they wanted to connect with you and share their story with you. So reach out to them and say thank you. Their contact information will be in the show notes below. Skip me, go straight to them and say we want to connect with you and find a way to be a part of what you're working on or do a deal with you. If you in the audience has a deal that you would like to talk about here on the show or share some wisdom and knowledge that's so valuable, head on over to thedealscout.com, fill out a quick form, get you on the show next. I love you guys and we'll talk to you on the next episode. Bye, everybody.